We do not have a quorum, but we're going to start the meeting, and first up is John Gross from the Department of Commerce, who had to sit through our meeting all day yesterday waiting to testify, and we ran out of time. So welcome back, John, and he's going to tell us about the stimulus package and the effect on COBRA. For those that don't know, COBRA is a if you leave your employment, you can stay on the employee's health insurance plan at full cost to you. So anyway, Mr. Gross, why don't you go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is John Gross. I'm with the Department of Commerce. I sort of bring to you good news and bad news. The bad news, so we'll start with the bad news. The bad news is this law, this stimulus package, is really predicated on involuntary loss of employment. So the person really, more or less, is let go from that employer. It's not where the employee terminates employment, but it's where the employer terminates that particular employee's job. But they do have the right to get a premium subsidy. And if you terminate employment in the sense between September 1st, 2008 and December 31st, 2009, you qualify. And I think the other good news about this bill is the fact that if you have family coverage, that is going to be subsidized too. The employee has to pay 35%. The employer will now pay 65%. And what the employer can do is deduct that off their FICA taxes and stuff like that. They have to pay the federal government in the future. This law does not affect other COBRA extensions of coverage, like for divorce or dependent children and stuff like that. And it's not going to affect anybody that terminated their employment prior to September 1st, 2008. And like I said, the employer pays 65% of the premiums. And there's a phase out. If you get up to $145,000 for an individual or $290,000 for the couple, you don't qualify. And the subsidy is good for 9 months. Now, it can earn, the subsidies continuation can end early. If you become eligible for another group health policy, you become covered by Medicare, or by chance your 18 months expires during that 9 month subsidy, then this subsidy will end. And again, it's effective starting on February 17th when the bill was signed. What's going to happen is the employer will provide to these employees, current employees that are terminating employment today or tomorrow, or going back to September 1st, anybody that terminated their employment, the employer will provide to them information about this. The employee then has 60 days to make up their mind. The U.S. Department of Labor is currently creating these forms that they will be sending out to the employers. Hopefully that the employee, you know, takes advantage of this if they can afford the 35%. What's really unique about this subsidy program, too, is we're going to go back to somebody that, back starting in September, who lost their job, who couldn't afford COBRA and never took it, or started it and quit it. They're going to have another opportunity to get COBRA and have 65% paid for it. So it's a really unique bill, in a sense, for somebody back to September 1st forward. So the employer has to remember who those people were, send out this notice, and if the employee and dependents want to continue their coverage, they'll be entitled to this. Also, what's kind of unique to this, too, which some employers might have two different health plans. If the employer wants to offer one of their other health plans that's comparable or less costly, they can also offer them that health plan for COBRA, too. So it's trying to be very, very helpful to anybody that is trying to maintain their health coverage for themselves, their family. And I think, like, Representative Thiessen's working on bills, too, that's trying to help people with the COBRA premiums and stuff like that, with continuing health insurance. So I think it's a real positive type of a benefit that's going to be provided to people across America, and especially in Minnesota, that gives them a grand opportunity to maintain their health coverage, to maintain their health, which I think you just think about somebody that's unemployed, trying to pay 100% of the premium, that could be next to impossible. But when you can try to only have to pay 65 cents, which could be, you know, problematic again too, but it's better than what we had before. Like I said, it's a deduction off the employer payroll taxes, stuff like that. So in my mind, it's relatively simple. I think it's extremely beneficial to all. What's also going on right now, for example, federal COBRA pertains to an employer with 20 or more employees. Our laws pertain to an employer with 2 or more employees. Under the federal law, it says the state COBRA provisions would apply here. So for any employer, 2 or more. The special enrollment period, where we go back to September, there's some questions if that is going to apply to state COBRA laws. There's a battle between CMS, U.S. Department of Labor, and Internal Revenue Service, and so far CMS and DOL think it would apply to the state COBRA laws, but we're waiting for the one that's going to pay the bill, that's Internal Revenue Service, to see what they have to say. So my point here is that some of these little things, little minor little things, are for some significance. For some people significant, we're still waiting for the feds to give us some clear indications about the various aspects of this bill. But again, I look at it as a very positive thing for all.
Mr. Gross, if somebody was terminated, was it last October? You said?
September 1st,
so let's say September 15th, they couldn't afford the payments. And now they're eligible, so they would, as soon as they sign up, they would then get the subsidy for 9 months in the future?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay.
And again, I was talking to my commissioner Glenn Wilson about this, and he said, well, this is a big, huge burden for the employer. And the employer is going to have to go back and look at all the people that they terminated since September 1st. But again, they sent out the notice. The employee's got 60 days to make up their mind and stuff like that. But I think, again, it's for a lot of people, this is really a blessing.
Okay. Representative Abler.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so I'm happy to hear about the flexibility. If they could even downscale themselves to a smaller policy, that's kind of nice, too. So if the employer offers a couple of choices, they can pick the choice they didn't have originally. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abel, yes, that is. As long as the other option is comparable or less costly.
Right. And an amount of money that was allocated to this, was it kind of a forecast? They estimated there'd be so many millions of people doing it, and then if more people take it, then they'll spend more money to ramp up to whoever qualifies, or is it a capped amount?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abel, I'm not aware of that.
Any further questions? Don't see any, so thank you, Mr. Gross, for your testimony, and this sounds like a program that will help some of the people that become unemployed.
Mr. Chairman, one more thing. We think on the information I gave you is the website and phone number for the U.S. Department of Labor. People could certainly call them if they've got questions and stuff like that, but I think it's going to be... they're the ones that really regulate the employers. But if by chance somebody has a question, we can certainly try to assist them. So.
You represent Thiessen. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who doesn't get helped by this?
Pardon me?
Who doesn't get helped by this?
If you left, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, if you quit your job, you don't qualify.
What? And also if your employer doesn't offer insurance.
That's correct, too.
Or you don't qualify for insurance through your employer, or if you didn't take insurance through your employer, even if they offered it. All those options, that this wouldn't help any of those people.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's correct. And also, anybody that terminated their employment prior to September 1st last year, they wouldn't qualify.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
That was my question. Thank you very much.
Great minds think alike. Any other questions? I don't see any, so thank you, Mr. Gross. And the meeting tomorrow, we don't have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting to order. And just to announce that tomorrow we're going to start about 1:35. I have another meeting I'm supposed to be at. Okay. And today we have three bonding request bills. The procedure that the bonding committee wants is to for this committee to send them a recommendation in a memo form, so we really don't have to vote on these bills. But you're going to, after the presentation today, if you want to rank these as high priority, medium priority, or low priority, and get that information to me, and then I'll collate that and send it off to Chairman Hausman. And so the three bills today, our first House File 256, is Representative Howes here?
Mr. Chair,
yeah, does that work? There's a deadline? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill as fine.
Okay.
For my classmates. As long as it doesn't involve Agua Ching, though.
Mr. Chairman, or Representative Abler, I gave my word to the chairman that I would not use those three words for the next 4 years. It's only been 2 years, so I will not use those three words, but you can.
And yeah, and you have an amendment, and the trouble is that none of these amendments got here in time. So, we're just going to make recommendations to the Hausman's committee, and in theory, we couldn't deal with this amendment unless if one person objects, we won't have the amendment. But
Mr. Chairman, I wouldn't mind if you ran it up the flag to see if one objected. Except if it's Amer, we don't count.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Well, I don't see any objections. So why don't you,
Mr. Almond?
Yeah, well, we'll start with the bill and then get into the amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the bill in its current form is asking for $21 million to build a hospital that would be owned and operated by Cass County. Cass County is one of three counties in Minnesota that does not have a hospital. And I was reminded today by some ambulance folks that I think are still in the room that it's a long way to a hospital if you're up on Onigam Trail in my district. Probably an hour's drive to any hospital. My district happens to be one of the oldest on average age in the state of Minnesota. In fact, the city of Longville that I used to have, and now is Representative Purcell's district, on average age is the oldest city in Minnesota. So we have an aging population. We're a poor district. And again, we don't have a hospital. I know that some have said to me, well, we don't do that. So like Representative Rukavina, I did a little research, and I have took this out of my pocket. In the year 2000, we bonded $7 million for Gillette Hospital. In 2003, we did for Rochester a medical school of $400,000. In 2006, we did the Wilmer Hospital and Dental Clinic for $500,000. In 2008, we did HCMC for $820,000. And in 2009, the good folks at Gillette are here asking for $30 million. So we have done it in the past. The original plan with this hospital was to build it with private funds and still have the county operate it. But as I think you're all aware of the economic situation nationwide, worldwide, in Minnesota, you can't borrow money today. It's just not there. So the private entity can't borrow or bond for it. So my county wanted me to move forward. Hopefully the state could look at this, and there might be some federal stimulus money next year that would be dedicated to schools and hospitals, and if so, I cannot capture that unless I have language or a bill in the Capital Investment Committee, which I serve on, and I have talked to Representative Hausman about this, and she said she would help me as best she could. And the amendment, Mr. Chairman, would be to bring it down to pre-design and design money.
So, do you want to make the amendment?
Mr. Chair, there's no objection, except it does use the word Agua Ching in the amendment. I would like to, without objection, I would like to offer the veto.
Thank you, Representative Abler, and as long as you say those three words, that's okay. My word was to the chair, I wouldn't use those three. But that's what it's called, and we can't change that.
And Mr. Chair, it does lower the face value from $21 million to $1.5 million. So. That'd be a friendly amendment to many people.
We should deal with the amendment first, but then the bill's going to be just put on the table. So all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. So the amendment is adopted. Any questions for Representative Howes? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Howes, I certainly am sympathetic to the need. I guess the question I have is, I think we have a hospital moratorium in this state, and that you have to deal with that. You can't just do a bonding project and have that be the authorization, if I am correct about that. Do you want to talk about that? Because it seems to me that would be the issue for this committee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Hall.
Thank you very much for that question. I was fully prepared for that. I have got a hospital exemption moratorium. Was it 3 years ago, Mr. Chairman? 4 years ago that we got that.
Yes.
We also have passed the federal test for a critical access hospital, so our reimbursement rate will be as high as we can possibly get it through the federal government. Also on the same site, we have secured a license for a long-term care facility that also has the highest reimbursement rate in the state of Minnesota. We are fully prepared in all avenues except for the financial crisis this nation faces.
Any other questions? Okay, what I would do is, or Representative Abler will renew his motion that House File 256, as amended, be laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
And the next one is Representative Fritz, House File 277.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for allowing us to come to you again with our request through the Remembering with Dignity organization. We have been before you before, and we've been before the Capital Investment Committee before, and we want to thank you for the money, the appropriation that we've received for this project.
Representative Fritz, do you want to make your motion that House File 277 be laid over?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do.
Okay. And then,
I'm excited about my bill. Thank you. Thank you again. And again, I do want to say a sincere thank you for the time today and also for the money that we have received in the past. We are almost to the middle of this project. In that we have been working very hard. These folks have been working very hard, and this is about the dignity of the residents in the state institutions in Minnesota, who between 1866 and 1997, 13,000 Minnesotans living in state institutions were buried in anonymous graves when they died. And this Remembering the Dignity Project gives us the money to have grave markers with their names placed in place of a numbered stake in the ground. And I do have two testifiers here that I would like to have them say their testimony, if you would please grant us that.
If you could state your name at the start so it shows up on the tape and we know
right.
Who's talking this.
My name is Hallie O'Selvey, and it's spelled H-A-L-L-E, and my last name is spelled O-apostrophe, F-S and Frank, A-L-V-E-Y. Mr. Chairman and members, I'm the new community organizer with Remembering with Dignity, and I'm very excited to be part of this. I started in June, and if you look on your thermometer here, you can see in the red that what we've done already, and it's just near half, and it's 5,050 that we've completed already. And in the piece, it's what we're working on right now, and that's in Moose Lake, Rochester, and Hastings, and we're working on 579 grave markers. And then our projection for the next 5 years would be to finish the 7,111 that are out there. If you look in the back, it's got the numbers, and what we're requesting is $1,878,580. And this is to complete the project, and it, 400 markers will employ one full-time employee. And when the monument companies work on these, they exclusively work on this. It's all they do, and there's the physical labor, and then there's the office labor that goes on. And we'd like to keep the momentum going on this since we're nearly half done. And I just love working this job. So I'll turn it over to Melvin.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am Melvin Hayes. I am a member of the committee for the past 10 years. We have been giving daily for our brothers and sisters in Bethlehem when they were in a state in a season. All over the state of Minnesota. I'm happy that you are thinking about bad other bills that helps us to finish the job at all of the old state institutions. I'm glad I wasn't wasn't in that season died. I did only have a number by on my grave. I'm a person too.
Thank you, Melvin. And members, Mr. Chairman, and members. Today, through the Reverend with Dignity, people with disabilities are leading the way in continuing this project, and we thank you for your for the appropriation that you have given us, and we hope that we can continue the momentum to continue this work. Thank you. Any questions?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to do a little quick math here, but, you know, and the bill coming forward, and certainly obviously very supportive. I mean, it's a tragic thing to think of a number being on a grave instead of a person. So no question about that, and glad to see the start of this process and making progress along the way during these challenging times. I think it's going to be difficult as we're dealing with other things, but that this community also needs as well, that today, right now, in their living situation, however in the future. But I just, my question though has to do with Section 1, and the grave markers, and I've seen this money here, but it also says, and for improvements of a capital nature at state cemeteries for Americans with disabilities. What portion of the 1.879 goes to the grave markers, and what portion goes to something else? I can't. And does 100% of that money in regards to the grave markers, does that all go to the actual grave markers themselves and those monuments?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer. There is a tremendous amount of research that goes into this, and the community organizer makes sure that we have the right name on the right marker, the right spelling, their actual birth date, their actual death date. Oftentimes, those are completely different. Some of these are handwritten markers, handwritten records over many years. So there's also an element of doing a newspaper ad which allows anybody within that catchment area of that particular state hospital that will, if they don't want a marker, if they're a relative of someone who has been buried there and they do not want a marker, then that has to happen also. There's also a lot of organizing around it for persons with developmental disabilities to participate in the decision-making process of what the marker should be, how they should look. And approximately 80% of all of the money goes for the bricks and mortar, but they cannot be put in there without some research that's done beforehand.
Rick, do you want to state your name for the tape?
Excuse me. Rick Carton is advocating Change Together.
And did Representative Kiffmeyer, that answer your question?
Yes, for now at this time it does. Yes, thank you.
Representative Abler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Maybe just to follow up with that thought, it might be productive if you could, I'm sure you have some accounting for what you expect and what the stone actually costs. And there must be a sheet. There's this thing here which is not very complete, but that might be helpful for members just to see that. And that can be given to staff and they'll pass it out. I just wanted to comment about the Anoka project. We had just a lovely, compelling meeting October 11th or something in Anoka at the cemetery when we kind of put the stones officially down. At least part of them were done in the frost hit. We didn't quite get done. But it was really interesting to hear some of this. The Anoka Regional Treatment Center Auxiliary got behind this. And there were dozens of, I guess it was mostly women, a few men, who had worked there in the past. And they told stories about these various patients. And just some of the tragic stories about, we'd never do that these days. And they were taken from their families and without any process. And then dad was gone. And then he's buried with a number, and it was amazing. And so I helped some of them raise some money, which they're still raising, and Hallie was part of that, and Rick. And it was just a very compelling, mournful celebration day. So that we got a gate built, some of the, and people were throwing in labor, and the Federal Cartridge gave some money, and the local businesses, and it was. It's a way to attract, so they wanted to get some private, the private people did the improvements to the cemetery, at least on our case, and the bonding money got the stones and whatever background work they do to get the names matched up. And it was, if you have one of these in your area, and it's just something to, to go to that event and to meet some of these, the children of some of the people who were there, and it was quite a day, and they were, it really helped a lot of them to close this time to give their grandma a name on the dirt there. And they had the numbered ones. They were old concrete things. And these were nice little granite things and very, I think, appropriate and proper. And it just seemed just like the right thing to do, which was kind of the slogan of our fundraising effort. It's just the right thing for us Anoka people to try to make this right, that these people be at rest. And it was... it meant a lot to me just as a, I never even walked on the grounds of the cemetery, and it's right by my high school. But it's just, and now there's a better fence, and so it's more obvious, and the kids say, "What? When did you put that there?" Well, it's been there for 50 years. So I wish you well in this, and but I think the accounting, this is the time of tight dollars, and the more you can show how the accounting helps, that'll help the decision makers to do that. So good luck.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a lovely project, but I'm wondering, do you have outside donations? And this goes, again, I guess, the business of accounting. Outside personal donations, family donations, foundations, and I would assume that you have tried to get those or have been in the process of trying to do some matching funds with those kinds of dollars, so I'm just wondering if that's not do you do it, do you not do it, is it just not included in the accounting here, and how successful are you at working with families, foundations, community efforts, etc., because as we look ahead at this session with the huge cuts we have to make, you know, I think it's an important question that you should have and be able to answer. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, we do have people who come and know about us when they find out about us, and they will donate money. I've only been here 7 months, so I'm not sure about a long history, but
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, over the years we've had different levels of funding. In Rochester, we've had over $35,000 to $40,000 that have been donated to assist with the participation of an event, plus putting up a new gate. And similar to, as Representative Abler was speaking, in Anoka, they have over the years developed a fund which brought in over $20,000 and some individual donations. And actually, that is part of the empowerment process that we use in each community that we go to and try to empower persons with developmental disabilities and other disabilities on how do we do some fundraising and how do we get people out there to bring in more funds to assist with whatever. And so it does two things. It empowers the individual on how to ask for something they think is important, but it also helps the project. So yes, indeed, we do supplement a lot of this, but it isn't in our records, and we present it here, but we can for sure do that. We're asking for donations every time, so if you want to donate money, you just send it to Remembering with Dignity.
We have in the audience some ninth grade students from St. Louis Park High School, and looks like they're getting ready to leave, so thank you for attending. And this is kind of an interesting, people your age are used to dealing with people in your classroom even that have disabilities. When I grew up, we never saw anybody like that. They were put in an institution and they just disappeared. And when they died, they got a number put on there where they were buried, not even a name. So what we're trying to do is address that problem and sort of make up for the things we did many years ago. So thank you for coming. And Representative Liebling. There she is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess so we're having kind of a chorus here of people who want to speak about the project, because it really is a very touching project. And I, some time ago, I'm trying to remember if it was a year and a half or so, attended a ceremony in Rochester for this project. And I have to say it was really incredibly touching and moving. And when I first learned about this, I think probably in my first term, my first reaction was kind of like, why would we do this? Because, you know, it's kind of like, why should we be so concerned about people who are, after all, dead? But when I went to the ceremony and even before that, it really came home to me that this really isn't about the dead. It's really about the living. Mm-hmm. And it's really about not only for some families in particular, but really for all of us. And what happened at the one that I was at is, people started to talk about, since the people in the state hospitals weren't just physically disabled, but many also had mental disabilities and mental illnesses, about the sort of the stigma and the hiding. And people at this meeting started talking about their own challenges, depression and various things, and kind of breaking the stigma. So, I mean, it's a really incredibly important project, I think. But I do want to just go back to what Representative Kiffmeyer, I think, was getting at, which is that how this year we have interests pitted against each other because of our financial situation. And I don't think any of us know the size of the bonding bill we're going to be able to do or how that's going to play out. But you know, I think we're all going to feel a lot of distress over the choices we have to make. And even though I don't know where this one's going to come out, because, you know, we do have to deal with the many needs of the living, and this being only one. But I just wanted to tell you all how much I appreciate this project. I think it operates on a lot of levels. I think it's a very important thing for us to do as a community.
Thank you, Representative Lee. May I just respond?
Representative Fritz.
Well, and I do want to say that this is closure for all of us in Minnesota. I have the Faribault State School and Hospital. I have two grave sites there, and I have visited them. I have relatives, friends, and neighbors who worked there.
and people and their families who worked there in those years. And that's all we knew. So we, I do appreciate the fact that you have funded us in the past, and we don't want to lose momentum, and we'd like to continue to move forward to get to the rest of those sites. So appreciate all of your comments, and Representative Adler as well. It is an emotional, moving experience for all of us, and I think we'll all come out of this better.
So Representative Fritz renews her motion that House File 277 be laid over. And with that, laid over. Okay, and the next is House File 1064, Representative Tao. And he has an also has an amendment that did not make the deadline, but does anybody object to the amendment being offered? So Representative Tao moves that House File 1064 be laid over, and he then moves the amendment DE1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the DE1 is the big change is we're changing from 30 million to 10, so the committee should like it.
So, any discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the amendment's adopted. Representative Tao.
Okay. Thank you. This last year, I believe we got planning money for, and it was the only St. Paul project that was not vetoed. I was fortunate, and the group was fortunate. You know, many of you guys know Gillette Hospital. It is a hospital for a lot of disabled children. And, you know, if you haven't had a chance, you should go over there and visit. Because many of the kids who are there are the 50% Medicaid, and they come from all over the state. Some are even from Wisconsin, I believe. It started out as a state hospital and eventually became a non-profit. And so this funding request is to expand and give them more room to serve the kids. And, you know, I went to one of the units. They made it nicer and allow families to come in, make it a little bit bigger, allow families to come in and spend overnight and spend time with their sick child in the hospital. And so this is some of the stuff that the money will be used for. And I have Margaret Perryman, the CEO, and Jim Hedekin, the CFO, and they'll talk a little bit about the project.
Good afternoon, Representative Huntley and committee members. I'm Margaret Perryman. I'm the CEO at Gillette Children's Specialty Healthcare. I'm here today to speak to this amendment, or to this bill. We were, Gillette Children's was founded by the state of Minnesota in 1897 to provide care to children with disabilities. We have been located in County Hospital since 1975, in buildings owned by Ramsey County. We do see patients from all of the 87 Minnesota counties in Minnesota. Our primary focus is children with disabilities, and in addition, we've expanded over the years to take care of adults with child-onset disabilities. Most of these are people who started in our organization, or started in our care services as children. In 2008, we took care of about 21,000 individual patients, and about 75% of these individuals are citizens in Minnesota. We have many different services focused on the needs of children and adults with disabilities. One of those services is an outreach program where we travel throughout the state providing services closer to home. In 2008, we visited the following communities: Alexandria, Aurora, Bemidji, Brainerd, Crookston, Detroit Lakes, Burgess Falls, Grand Rapids, International Falls, Mankato, Marshall, Moose Lake, Owatonna, Park Rapids, Roseville, Wilmer, and in addition, we have a clinic located in Duluth. In our outreach services, we saved about 400,000 driving miles for our patients. In addition, that means that families didn't have to take their children out of school for a day. They didn't have to take time off work to travel. They didn't have to find a hotel in St. Paul. Many of these expenses related to travel to our location are covered by the state, so in essence, we really save the state money by providing these services closer to home. We've seen a growth in the number of patients that we've seen over the last 20 years. We've been a freestanding nonprofit institution for 20 years, and we've seen about a 600% growth and the number of children and adults we care for during that time. With me today is Jim Hattigan, and he's going to explain in greater detail the use of the funds.
Thank you. As already been stated, Gillette has over 50% of our patients are covered by Medicaid. The statewide average is, I believe, 11%. So over the years, and particularly the last 8 years, that reimbursement has been falling rather rapidly. And this year, we now will be paid only 61% of the cost of caring for those children. Our losses have grown fourfold just since 2004, from $2.5 million to $10.8 million. And that really brings us to the reason for asking for this money. As was cited in the earlier testimony, the credit markets have seized up. They're particularly tough to go to for nonprofits. Children's hospitals and us in particular have the added problem of Medicaid, having that many children covered by a funding source that only covers 61%. It's not a good story to tell to a nervous credit market, and so that is why we're asking for the state's help this year.
Okay, questions, Representative Abler.
Hi, can you just? I remember the story along about this. They've shopped us well on the underpayment, especially in yours with the high focus on MA people. Can you just tell me how you plan? This thing you show here, you reduce it from 30 to 10. What is $10 million by?
The $10 million is to help us fund the phase one of the expansion, and that will be, we will be moving into some space that has been vacated by Regents Hospital on the Regents campus, which is owned by Ramsey County, and we will start doing some work on expanding our pediatric intensive care unit, and beginning to add some additional surgical capability.
Okay. Representative.
Yeah, and so but you called for $20 million in phase one, so do you have $10 million from private sources and then $10 million of state? Is that your plan?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm sure there's a lot that we could ask about this, but I have sort of an odd little question, I guess. And that is about the use of the term crippled in the bill. And I realize there's a historical issue there. But I'm just wondering, do we use that? I mean, if this bill would be, you know, I mean, we're putting this in law, and it's on 1.8. And I'm just wondering... You know, we've I think, taken some steps to remove such language from our statutes, and I'm just wondering why that needs to be in here.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cleveland, I'm sure it's not the misdraft of the staff of the revisor's office. I think I'm sure we could find better terms to describe the need.
Absolutely.
As this move forward.
Absolutely. Children with disability is the term we use all the time. And I'm embarrassed to see that in the bill, and we'll certainly look at making sure that. Thank you.
Representative Slavik is next, then Kiffmeyer, and Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's sort of like Representative Liebling. Did you say it was an odd little question? I have one of those, too. You know, I'm just going to bring this up, and maybe all of you got this call, too. There's some research firm calling legislators about Children's Hospital. Not you guys, but the other Children's Hospital. And so they go through a series of... Have anybody gotten this call? Yeah. And they go through a series of questions on when we might see funding as friendly for them or not friendly to them in different scenarios, and one is a capital improvement project, and if they're in dire need, you know, would we see them as more needy, you know, and be more favorable towards them. So what's confusing for me is when you have something like Children's in St. Paul, and then you have you guys, and there's Children's in Minneapolis, I think they're one system, is do they not serve kids like this, or is it just... Can you clarify that for me?
Certainly. I'm sorry, I didn't. Representative Huntley. Gillette Children's Center Healthcare has been a provider of services for children with disabilities for 120 or 15 years. Minneapolis Children's and St. Paul Children's have, their mission is more related to children with acute and acute illnesses. I would say, and I actually worked at both institutions, and so I have a really good understanding of the patient populations, and they are very different. The children being provided care by the Institute at Children's Hospital in Minneapolis and St. Paul, both incredibly wonderful institutions, are children with cardiac disease, children with oncological diseases, children with problems in the neonatal, the first month of life, children with infectious diseases of all sorts, what is often called acute diseases, and we take care of children with disabilities.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slavik.
I mean, this is a comment more so is for us to decide as members eventually when we're looking, I guess, at the bonding bill is how it fits in with everything else and how you weigh hospitals against each other, which I know, Mr. Chair, you have to do that all the time, but for some of us aren't as used to it. On how you do that, and sometimes members, and I want to talk about that survey, was very interesting that they're doing out there and trying to get a feel for what legislators think on these types of issues. Just so you know, thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I didn't see all the technical stuff in regards to your question. I took a tour, and you could see the big difference between, you know, I take my children to Children's Hospital. Then I visited Gillette Hospital, and you could see the difference. Many of the children who come into to get the service are on wheelchair or they have limited mobility. And what's significant about Gillette is there's a workshop in there. If one of the kids needs what is it?
Prosthetic
artificial limbs. They'll build it right there, and they'll match it with that kid's body and make it a perfect fit for that person. And so that's where the big difference are. Is they have those capability versus like children, which is for general, just regular kids. So,
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much to Gillette, who took care of my sister many, many, many years ago, and appreciate that very much and unique service. My question, though, has to do with the $10 million in private. Could you explain a little bit more about what the $10 million in private is?
Yes, that's going to be a combination of fundraising, some of our private reserves. If necessary, we may take out a small bank loan, but we are confident we have the match.
Okay, Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the testifiers and Representative Tao. With all due respect to the great work Gillette does, and I know you do, I'm trying to think statewide and funding precedent and that sort of thing. I can imagine there are other hospitals. I know, for example, Agua Ching is looking to expand their facilities. And here we are coming with $10 million for Gillette. I'm sure there are other hospitals in the state that would love to have funding to expand for many needy and worthy services. So I'm a little concerned about the precedent we're setting. I know the legislature, I'm trying to recall the number. I think back in 2000 we gave, what, $7 million to Gillette? Maybe you could, yeah, okay. So I have a little bit of concern along those lines and wonder if you could maybe speak to that.
Yes, that is correct. We did care before $7 million for an expansion at that time. And our issues were very similar. Again, we have five times the amount of Medicaid of the average state hospital. We're paid 61% of cost. So every time there's a cut in Medicaid, it hits us five times harder, and which is an issue that just children's hospitals face as well. And so it does make getting outside funding difficult. My preference as a CFO would be that the state would pay us the actual cost of care and we would go get our own financing when we need it. This is, for me, a second choice. But I do think that one way or another, we do need some state help because this is for costs that aren't being covered by the state.
Representative Gottwell. Mr. Chair, thank you. I would just point out that, for example, CentraCare Health System in St. Cloud is projecting that if MA cuts occur the way they are, they too will lose significant dollars, including, I think they're projecting about $8 million. So these are impacts that are impacting other hospitals as well, and some with very high percentages of Medicaid. So just something perhaps for us to keep in mind as we consider these funding options.
Mr. Chair, at one time Gillette Hospital was a state institution, and I think we still have that. Even though today, currently, legally, it's not a state institution, I think we still are under the obligation to make sure that kids from all over our state who go there are taken care of.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a simple question. What is your percentage of Medicaid volume, please?
Volume, it's 50% of our patients. I don't have the actual statistics here with me that I could of patient visits, but I can certainly get that for you.
And then Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Powell, and I just want to make the comment that in greater Minnesota, where I come from, Faribault and the Owatonna area, we do send our children to Gillette. And also I want to thank you again publicly for saving my grandson's life 20 years ago from a car accident that he got in St. Cloud and then was helicoptered and landed in Gillette, thank God, where they saved his life. He's now 24 years old, very disabled, but working and alive and a joy to my life. Thank you.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I may should offer an oral amendment just to get rid of that word that we don't like. And just to, by on line 1.9, just at least for a placeholder, just strike the word crippled and insert special needs. I think that at least be a start, and it can be improved later. Maybe staff is a better advice. Of the amendment, I'm sorry. Yeah, where were they? You know what, okay.
1.8.
So 1.8, then. Is that a word you like better? That's a word I like better. But is there a better word that you can think of?
Virtually disabilities.
She recommends able children with disabilities.
That's just what I would be offering as an amendment.
Okay. So Representative Abler moves on line 1.8 of the amendment that it says it. We strike the word crippled and after children insert with disabilities. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. So the amendment is adopted. And any other discussion? Seeing none, Representative Tower renews his motion that House File 1064, as amended, be laid over. So, thank you very much, and we're going to meet tomorrow at 1:35, and we also have Representative Abler has been reading the minutes.
They're really a good man.
And he determined that his name was spelled correctly, so he moves that we approve the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. So the minutes are adopted, and the meeting is adjourned.